This is Farming for Nature. I'm Bridget Barry, and today I'm with beef farmer Tommy Early, who's restoring a 25-acre raised bog on his farm in Roscommon in the west of Ireland. Tommy, you're farming 100 acres on the side of Loch Allen in County Roscommon, some of which is raised bog. Can you tell me a little about your farm for those of us who have not visited? The farming system, the land type, etc.
Okay, I'm farming on the shores of Loch Allen, and I'm on a little low hill called a drumlin. And between the drumlin and the lake, I have a small area bog. It's what's called a lowland raised bog. We have two types of bogs in this country. We have blanket bogs and lowland raised bogs. Blanket bogs occur up on a more higher ground, but both bog types are dependent on the rainfall. But both would have started off life differently. The bog that I have, for instance, it started off life. It was a little bay in the corner of a lake. And gradually over time, all the reeds started to infill from the sides. So eventually it got completely covered over in reeds. And trees would have started to grow on it. And when those trees would have died off, the grasses, everything started, the reeds continued to grow up. It continues to do this until such time as it loses contact with the groundwater underneath. So it's at that stage then that the true bog starts to develop on it. The mosses start to grow on it because the mosses are being fed by the rain, and that's what causes our bogs to grow is the rainwater.
Have you always kept an eye on your bogs, or was there a specific time that you decided, okay, I want to do something to preserve this bog, and why was that?
If you remember back in 1996, there was a thing called reps for farmers. I joined in reps, and it was doing some of the courses on reps that I found out about a little more about the habitats that are on the farm. One of those habitats was a lowland raised bog. So when I found out how scarce that these habitats were, we'll say in the European context, I wanted to do something to preserve it, that it would be there for future generations to enjoy.
Once you found out it was such a rare special habitat, what does that mean for you?
It's something that has been growing there for 10,000 years, you know. So it'd be a real shame to come in and drain it or change it around in any way and not be able to pass it on. Like, you know, if it was an old dinosaur that you had there that was that age, you know, you'd have no problem seeing it as something living. But it's because we'd say bogs are so stationary, we don't see them as a living thing no more than the soil.
How would a farmer know what type of bog they have on their land, you know, whether it's the raised or the blanket?
Well, usually the blanket bogs are kind of in uplands, you know, and the lowland raised bogs are kind of usually on the margins of lakes, or would have started off where there would have been already a pool of water in the landscape.
And do you think most people see it as an advantage or a challenge to have bogland on their land?
I think we'd say in the present climate, there's a lot more talk about bogs, and I think that maybe we're finally starting to appreciate them for what they do. Because, you know, we had the COP meeting there in Scotland, and there's a lot of talk about carbon and everything all else. But bogs, for the size of them, they're one of the best things we have for storing carbon. For 3% of the landmass, they contain 30% of the carbon, which is a lot, like, you know. But they'll only do that if we can keep them in the right condition, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think now that we have a better understanding of how bogs work, and hopefully we'll gain more of an appreciation of them, and that we can do the right thing.
How do you keep your bog in the right condition? What's the best thing to do for it? What are the best options for bogs?
Well, in terms of a bog, and for a bog to be working well, it has to be, it's all about the water table in it. And you want to keep that water table to within about a foot at the top of the bog so that it doesn't dry out. Because when bogs, and what happens, we'd say, has happened in the past, and a lot of bogs where people want to take the turf out of them, they went in and put drains in them to take the water out. But then those bogs started to decompose, if you want, and they started to release the carbon that they had stored back up again. So in order to preserve the bog that we have, what we're doing is we've blocked up some drains on it, and in one corner of it, we've been to, built an embankment around it to hold the water back in the bog.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's how people can re-wet it.
That's how you can go for re-wet it, yeah.
So, I mean, they're like natural sponges, aren't they? So if they're kind of managed properly, are they a good protection against flooding? You live on the edge of a lake, you know, to manage your bogs around this area. Would you say it kind of helps against kind of further flooding around the area as well?
Yeah, well, what bogs do is when it rains, they're like, as you say, like a big sponge. They take in a massive amount of water and they hold that water, but then they release it very, very slowly. So that gives the rivers a chance to dissipate the water downstream. Whereas if you didn't have the bog, with some of that big lot of rain comes down on you, it'll all just flood the rivers and fortunately maybe flood some houses downstream as well.
Mm-hmm. What does a badly managed bog look like?
Unfortunately, in the past, we've planted some forestry on bogs, and this was really not the thing to do, because what happened there was, and people probably, you know, maybe thought they were doing a good thing at the time, but what happened was when they went in and they drained those bogs in order to plant trees on them, they actually released all the carbon that had been already stored in the bog. Mm. So as the trees grow up, you know, they're taking in a little bit of carbon, but you're losing, yeah, even when those trees are cut, then you lose a lot of the carbon again. So going in and putting trees on bog is an absolute no-no, because every tree you put on a bog is a bit like a little water pump. It's taking the water out of the bog, and you're losing all the carbon that's already stored there for the thousands of years before you come on the scene.
Okay, so if you don't have forestry on your bog, you want to not have it dry, you want to re-wet it, are you allowed to graze your bogs?
You'd want to see, you know, your bog and see what species you have on the bog. You know, it's, I'm lucky enough in that I have marsh fritillary on one corner of the bog, and it needs a particular grazing regime. You know, you don't want to overgraze it and you don't want to undergraze it either. So maybe it's something about maybe one animal per acre or something like that, or even less. Is enough to keep the scrub down and to get the right amount of grass cover on it for the marsh fritillary.
Is there certain trees that if you see them starting to grow on your bog, it's a big no-no?
Well, the first trees that you'll see moving in will be silver birch. They're what they call a pioneer species. They'll be the first to kind of take a grip. And once you see, you know, they'll self-seed into it. They won't grow or thrive on the bog unless it's drying out. Mm. And if you see those starting to move in, you'll know that, you know, maybe it could set off an alarm bell that there's something happening here. It's drying out too much, you know.
So nature does have its alarm bells, as you say, to kind of give you a heads up that it's not going the right direction.
This is it, yeah. And as well, like every plant on the bog and everything is telling you something, like, but we have to find out what is it telling us.
How long does it take to get a good bog back? Or is that, I mean, how long is a piece of string, I suppose? But
well, yeah.
You know, if you wet, so what I'm trying to say, if you block your drains and you start to re-wet it and it's come up to the kind of within the foot that you're talking about, I mean, when can you expect to see nature starting to respond? Or
well, nature has a wonderful ability to restore itself once we give it the chance. And we've seen, you know, areas that were re-wetted within, you know, maybe a year or two, you'll see the sphagnum moss is starting to take hold on it. And give it 5 years, you'll see a layer of moss coming back on it. And if you keep that water table high in the bog, that layer of moss will continue to grow and grow and grow. And that's the sphagnum moss, that is the bog builder. Mm-hmm. But bogs, don't expect results too quick, because bogs grow at a very, very slow rate, about a millimetre a year.
Okay, yeah. What species would you expect to see on your bog once it's coming back? You were saying the sphagnum moss. What else? Was it butterflies, dragonflies? What else might one see on your bog? What have you seen on your bog has come back?
Well, yeah, we've been hen harrier hunting over it. You'll have snipe, you'll have skylarks on it. Yeah, the middle of it. But you'll have all those species. We'll start to use it. Well, once it's right, and hopefully, in time that if you got it things just right, you'll have the curlew using it as well. You see, a lot of those wetland species of birds, they like to nest out in a kind of a wide open area where they can see predators coming in from the sides. So they would kind of and they're quite happy on that then.
And so the bog provides a nesting area as well as the food that they need, and like you say, enough space that they can see if predators are coming.
Yeah, and that's where they feel safe, where they're out in the middle of a wide open space.
Can you remember one specific moment when you were proud to have this bog on your land, that you there was something that you can you remember something that you saw on your peat land and you're like, great, I've done a good job now. I've arrived nearly.
Yeah, well, I suppose I've been lucky enough in that I've had various people work with me on the restoring of the bog, and one of them is Dr. Raymond Flynn that we're doing some work with at the moment. And the day that he had his, it's called a Russian core machine, where you dig down into the bog and you take out a core and pull it up, and you can look back down through the core to see, the various trees that would have grown there in the past. So he was able to show me trees that had grown there 1,000 years ago,
Wow.
2,000, 3,000. We went up, we kept the, like with the core, you can keep adding on little bits to it and go down deeper and deeper. So we went back 8,000 years looking at the roots of the different
Wow.
trees. Yeah.
It sets you back in time, doesn't it?
It does. And you think, like, oh, no, what a tragedy it'd be to come in and drain this and lose it.
It seems to me that peatland is kind of, it's like the unsung hero, isn't it, of biodiversity. People don't talk about it as much as they should, nearly, because it holds so much.
Yeah, well, I look at it, I suppose it's only in the last few years that we're really starting to appreciate what peatlands can do for us, and I think then now is our chance to maybe start to that restoration back to where it should be. We have very little peatlands that's working really well in this country at the moment. We have a lot of carbon in the ground, but like if we don't do some management on it, we will lose a lot of it.
Every farmer that has peatland, they can do something better, you believe. What would that be?
Well, hopefully in the future now that farmers, at the moment a farmer won't get any payment if he has an area bog on it. He won't get any payments on it. But hopefully in the future, you will be able to get maybe some sort of a carbon payment for if you're restoring the bog and you have it back in good working order. I know that at the moment farmers in Wales and in Scotland are getting payments for doing this type of work. So hopefully in the future that will happen here.
So, I mean, it's of advantage to keep an eye on it, keep looking after it, as well as the biodiversity and things that visit it and etc.
That's it. And it's like having a real old history book there, and it'd be a shame, like, we'd say the scientists can find out an awful lot of information from every layer that they go down through, and hopefully, but only if we keep that history book intact.
What are the final top tips that you would give to any farmer that has bogs?
Well, the first thing I do is go along and visit as many other bogs, because there is some very good projects around the country. Go along and see what sort of work are they doing on their area bogs, and see if there are any maybe some of that that you could adapt to suit yourself, or just get yourself informed on the whole carbon situation on bogs and how bogs actually work, because they're fascinating places. And I know that when I was in school, there was no emphasis put on bogs at all, that there were any described as areas of waste that, you know, there couldn't be anything done with. But like, it's only now that we're realizing how valuable they are. So I suppose information is king, and to find out as much as you can about this, if you're lucky enough to own an area bog, to find out as much as you can about the peat that's in it and how it has got to be put there in the first place, but what you can do to preserve it.
Because it seems to me that, I mean, by having bog on your land, you know, there is benefits to the farmer that there's a bit of a grazing area if you need that, because it's good to kind of have a bit of stock on it. But it's also, I suppose, ecologically, it provides good habitat. And then climate-wise, it's a storage sink, you've kind of mentioned. So, but they have to be in good condition in order to...
bog wouldn't, like we'd say in terms of grazing, it'd be very light grazing, you know, that you might do on it. But you might only be doing that if you had, depending on what species you might have on it, you know. So they are a very valuable habitat, and we're very fortunate to have bogs in this country. So we must do what we can to save them.
Tommy Early, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Please rate, review and subscribe to our podcast. And if you want to get in touch or ask a question, you can email me info@farmingfornature.ie or link up on Twitter @farmfornature.